From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of September 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. A bit later in the program, the folks at the Andersons will join us to take a look at the cash grain segment from right here in Champaign County, and then we'll discuss the weather, too. Looks like it should be a great open week across a good portion of our part of the world in the Corn Belt for the harvest season. That with the guys up at Wrist Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. Along the way, we'll update you on what's happening in agriculture as it relates to news out of Washington, D.C., and Daryl Good takes a look at the potential for the size of the corn crop in Argentina, and all happens right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago on this Monday afternoon. December corn down 7.5 cents at $3.29. The March at $3.39, 7.25 lower. November beans 9.75 lower at $9.45.25. January at $9.51.5, down 9.5. Bean oil futures 19 cents lower. Bean meal down $5.70. Soft red winter wheat the harvest month July down 6.5 at $4.43.5. The hard red at $4.50.75 in the July, down 7 cents. Live cattle futures finished the October at $106.55, down 72.5 cents. Feeders $1.52.5 lower in the October at $130.85, and lean hogs at $53.25, 97.5 cents lower. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, to take a look at the marketplace. Thanks for being with us, Kurt.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, Monday of this week should be a fantastic week for producers to be in the field in our part of the world. Dry for the most part. There is some rainfall scheduled for later in the week, but boy, it looks like it should be a really good start for the week and harvest. What are you hearing from them as they get into the fields full force this week?
Well, some of them waiting for a little rain event. They've been going awful strong and due for a little bit of rest. But for the most part, the big news is everyone's aware of bean yields continue to come in strong. They're pleasantly surprised. Not a whole lot of bean activity. I think as a nation, we're probably going to be about 10% complete. You know, in this area through here, I think about 1% complete. Guys have been real heavy corn-wise, but a lot of 70-bushel beans. There's some cases, you know, a little bit higher than that, and of course, you know, some yields coming in lower than that. Corn-wise, drying down fairly rapid here with this nice weather, you know, saving some drying costs, you know, is a major help. Then two, actually yields have been, you know, fairly good. You know, a lot of 230, 240, every now and then 260, 270. It's good, but not as good as 2014 in most areas. But you know, with the high input cost and you know, the price and everything, guys were kind of expecting a little higher corn yield, but, you know, they're happy with what they have thus far.
Was today's loss in the beans because of the bigger bean yields? Was it on the idea that we'll have, I don't know, the losses or some losses out of the bean oil and maybe more some Malaysian palm oil coming into the market? What are we looking at for the day?
Probably a little bit of all of the above. Malaysian palm oil is going to remain somewhat strong, and that's going to hopefully you know, support our bean oil market. The concern would be on the meal side of the equation here. As we crush for oil, we might have a few more meal stocks. But meal related is the DDGs in China. There's concern that what little they've taken will probably slow even further yet, keeping a backlog of that here in our country, which would be more competitive with meal. Then, you know, more talk of better yields than expected, ideas that we can maybe raise the bean yield from 50.6 up to 52 to 53 bushels to the acre and return at anywhere from 80 to 160 million bushels of bean inventory to the supply demand balance sheet. But overall, beans have been caught in a sideways pattern. It seems like these Novembers, once they dip down into this 930 level, they have a tendency to run back up into the upper nines, kind of back and forth ever since the first part of August there. The key is to make sure we hold the recent lows here that we established a few weeks ago at this 938 level. Technically, the bean chart's still holding intact, a head and shoulders bottom. A move below that 938 level would signal some lower prices here as we move into the 1st of October.
Do you give much credence to the thought that USDA would raise the yield for soybeans in the October crop production report, given they're already so far outside of what the trend line normally has been for soybeans?
That might be, you know, a hard obstacle to see them come in and raise it a whole lot. Yeah, I would think, you know, corn's got some room to be adjusted here, but beans, it's kind of hard to imagine them coming in and then bumping it up that high here this early.
Does it surprise you that the back months in the soybeans have traveled along with the front months and stayed fairly strong?
Well, we're seeing a situation where you even go out to next year or even into next summer as far as this crop goes, you know, you're starting to develop some carry in the market. The thing is, as we get through this fall into this winter, we're going to start seeing the trade talk South America. And there's a lot of moving parts there, and particularly in Argentina, you know, talk of maybe not so much of an increase in bean acres, you know, corn. There's talk of switching to more corn, you know, corn a little better priced. But the main thing in Argentina on the acreage is exports, the export tax on beans versus no export tax in corn. So there's a lot of moving parts there, and there's a lot of uncertainty as we go into 2017. And the market's going to have to develop a little bit of premium in those deferred contracts to ensure acres in the southern hemisphere.
Anything on the livestock market side that we need to pay attention to? Cattle on feed report was out Friday afternoon.
Yeah, when you look at those numbers, we're you know, seeing an increase in numbers as we move along and through here. You know, placements 115, you know, about 2% more. Marketing's 118%, about 1% more. The weight breakdown is the smaller animals are coming in heavier. So we're going to probably be looking at a situation of heavier weights as we go down the road. We've not seen a whole lot of increase in weights thus far on the fats coming to market, but the concern would be down the road here, not only more numbers, but heavier old steers and heifers coming in, which would continue to add supply to the market. As far as the hog and pig report, that'll be out Friday. It's expected to show a slight increase, along with chick and egg placements. All this livestock in general starting to see an increase in number, which should ensure large feed demand here as we go into this winter.
Thanks so much for taking the time. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very good, Todd. Take care.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. In today's agricultural news, we'll start in Washington, D.C., where a procedural vote on Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's bill to fund the government through December 9th is teed up for tomorrow. If Congress does not pass a bill by Friday, the government could go into full-on shutdown. Democrats likely aren't going to get on board right away, mainly because the bill includes funding for Louisiana and other flood-ravaged states, but nothing for the water crisis in Flint, Michigan. Democrats could block the vote on Tuesday if most of them line up against it, pushing a vote until the last possible minute. On a similar note, we'll turn to the Water Resources Development Act. The House Rules Committee meets at 5 o'clock tonight, that's Eastern Time, to set up the House's Water Resources Development, or H.R. 5303, for floor action. But the bill's path forward is looking increasingly complicated. That's because Democrats are signaling they'd oppose the measure en masse because of the exclusion of the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund provision and the lack of funds, again, for Flint, Michigan. And yet another wrinkle emerged late last week when House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy floated the possibility of trying to add controversial California drought language onto the lower chamber's measure. Meanwhile, the Congressional Budget Office last Friday pegged the bill's cost at $3.1 billion over the next 10 years. Well, let's move a little further down the legislative calendar now to the 2018 Farm Bill. As agriculture grapples with the question of land transition and ensuring a stable workforce, state agriculture secretaries, commissioners, and directors are mulling whether the next Farm Bill could be of some help. Those issues, along with low dairy prices, water quality issues, and disaster relief funding, were brought up in a discussion about potential priorities when the legislation comes up for reauthorization in 2018, that by members of NASDA at their annual meeting in Lincoln, Nebraska last week. The group expects to finalize its Farm Bill priorities list earlier next year. While conservative taxpayer groups are looking to split the Farm Bill in two, NASDA members talked about adding a title related to land transition. We've added titles over the years, starting with the original commodity titles, so it's not unheard of that we add a title around transition, said South Carolina Agriculture Secretary Hugh Weathers. If getting new people into farming is seen as vital, then it has a place in the Farm Bill. Capitol Hill tends to listen to the state agriculture officials when it comes to the Farm Bill. Vermont Agriculture Commissioner Chuck Ross said 6.5 of NASDA's 7 priorities made it into the 2014 bill, including the full funding of grants to states for specialty crops and region-wide conservation programs. Oh, let's stay with Washington, D.C. legislation for just a bit more. Michigan Senator Debbie Stabenow, the ranking member of the Senate Agriculture Committee, is set to introduce an urban farming bill this afternoon that her office says will create new economic opportunities in cities and towns across Michigan and the country. Stabenow is to be joined by Food Policy Action co-founder Tom Colaccio and members of the National Young Farmers Coalition and the National Conference of Mayors in a conference call with reporters at 3:30 Eastern today. On a similar agriculture twist towards urban, or at least towards more consumer-oriented agriculture, in case you needed another sign of the paradigm shift in the egg industry, the USDA recently announced it's launching a monthly report to track supply and price of cage-free eggs. The first report shows large cage-free white eggs with an average price of $2.84 a dozen. That's compared to $1.11 for conventional caged eggs. The flock size for non-organic cage-free hens is about 17 million compared to 3.5 million for organic eggs. And finally today, we'll go international, but from a viewpoint from right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. The Agricultural Ministry in Argentina says farmers there will plant 7.2 million hectares of corn this season. It's a 4% increase over last year, and the most corn the country has seeded in the last 76 years. That'll put some pressure on U.S. farmers, says University of Illinois agricultural economist Darrell Good. But it isn't as bad as you might think.
The good news is that even a big response there is not a lot of acres, but all of that increase would be looking for a home in the export market, which would be competition for the U.S.
7.2 million hectares of corn is about 18 million acres, by the way, or just a bit more than the number of acres of corn farmers in South Dakota planted this year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Looks like a fantastic, wide-open harvest week across the Corn Belt. Be safe out there, whether you're in one of the machines that's bringing in that crop, or if you happen to be traveling on some of the byroads where those combines and tractors and carts and semis, they're heavy, big, sometimes really slow, are moving. And you won't win if you tangle with one of them. The farmers are watching out for you. You watch out for them as well. Now to the farmers and those who are listening to the programming because they want to hear more about the agricultural commodities. I need your help. We're in the midst of our fall fund drive. It's been really quiet, going to remain that way, especially if you get on the phone or on this website right now. You can call 217-244-0025 or go to willpledge.org, willag.org. Look for the donor button if you don't know where that is, and make a pledge in support of agriculture. Make sure you tell them if you're on the phone it's in support of agriculture, or hit the check boxes on the website. If you do that right now, a group of our existing friends have agreed to double the money. Every dollar you give will be matched dollar for dollar. So it's really important that you do it right now. We're wrapping things up. It should be a really good week for you in the field. Make it a really good week for us as well. Do it right now, 217-244-0025 or willpledge.org. Oh, and thank you. Thank you for the gift, and thank you for listening. Well, let's take a look again at the pork industry and some of the diseases they deal with. Last week, we told you about how the pork producers and their incoming president are worried about foot and mouth disease in this nation and are hopeful that USDA can create a vaccine bank to protect against such a thing. The U.S. pork industry, of course, is calling for funding of that foot and mouth disease vaccine bank in the next Farm Bill. But Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says the issue is far more complicated than just finding the funding. The National Pork Producers Council says the U.S. does not have enough FMD vaccine to handle a major U.S. outbreak, and that antigen strains at Plum Island, New York, would have to be shipped overseas for mass production into a vaccine that could eat up precious time needed in a major foot-and-mouth disease outbreak. However, Vilsack and the Department of Agriculture told the Senate Agriculture Committee it would take more than just the $150 million livestock groups want in the next Farm Bill for a vaccine bank.
Current capacity is limited because of where the research is being done on Plum Island. It's being done offshore. There have been concerns expressed about transferring that research to a facility within the U.S., and there are concerns about the impact that that would have, because you would be introducing, in essence, FMD into the internal workings of the U.S.
Secretary suggests it's not an easy decision.
We've been waiting for the industry to come to us with a consensus opinion about whether or not that's appropriate. There's still some divisions, some uncertainty about that. I think when the facility in Kansas is ultimately completed, that we would then be in a position to provide the level of certainty and guarantees of safety that people are concerned about. But right now, that's the impediment, is where the research is done.
Vilsack told senators that a larger facility than Plum Island with biocontainment would be able to do more research and vaccine production more quickly, key to dealing with a major foot and mouth disease outbreak. Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Let's check in with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. Mark, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. Looks like it's going to be really kind of open weather for farmers to get out and get after the harvest this fall. Tell me about it from east to west, please.
Yeah, well, in the eastern belt, that is certainly the area that's been most favorable over the past week or so. And upcoming, there will be some rain shower activity, but totals do not look exceptionally high, but there will be some windows of unsettled conditions from now through the end of this week. But overall, with that, totals, we're forecasting totals in the range of about 0.3 to 1.5, a few locally heavier spots here. But as we get beyond the next 5 days, it does look like the eastern belt we'll have another stretch of open weather. So this is really brief in duration and really confined to the next 4 to 5 days, this window of unsettled conditions. Out across the western Midwest, that area has certainly been the wet zone, and they are going to get 5 to 7 days of totally dry conditions. So ultimately, that will allow for an improvement in fieldwork operations and harvest progress. And that's especially true kind of centered in Iowa, which has been hardest hit here of late. So an overall improving situation in the West, in the east again. Just a brief window here of some unsettled conditions, but that will be followed up by drier weather. And as we move through the remainder of September and begin October.
Yesterday afternoon, cool weather moved across the Midwest. Felt like fall this morning when I woke up and stepped outside. Are we going to stay that way?
Well, for this week, it will have generally a seasonal temperatures here. So the ultra to even record warmth that we've seen of late certainly now has come to an end. But we do see a return of warmer than normal conditions, and that will kick in again late in the upcoming weekend and on into next week. And so with the pattern here, overall, this warm theme that we've been in for quite some time is going to continue to be with us. So, yeah, it's beginning of October. It looks like more warmth is on the way.
Let's hop across the globe just a bit. I want to start in China. They're in the midst of harvest there. What's their season looking like for bringing in the crop?
Overall, there's going to be some slowdowns in harvest progress, and particularly in northeastern areas, which will be in a wetter-than-normal regime coming up here. So that's certainly something to watch, but not of any major concern at the present time.
And in South America for sowing their crop?
Yeah, down across South America, overall, there are no signs of any big red flags in the pattern here. So no sign of any major weather issues evolving as we move in October. There's a few dry pockets around, but nothing that critical. Actually, one area is in Argentina, but they look to get rain here upcoming, and that should help improve soil moisture. And then across Mato Grosso, where there's now starting to plant there in west central Brazil, overall, they've gotten some rains here of late. More is on the way, and that should allow for continued timely planting.
Hey, thanks so much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Risk Pulse. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.